go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Thank you very much, Jeremy in Vermont. Loud and clear on TuneIn, says Jeremy. Good to know. Thank you indeed very kindly. This is the 10th day of September 2015, and wow, September is roaring past, almost like a NASCAR vehicle in the straightaway, just howling on down the road. Yes, indeed. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room. We've already got a nice little group beginning to gather in there. And we're off. Yes, indeed. Good evening to Anatole and to Earther and Jug of Punch and Texas D. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. He's also a third stage guild navigator who has chosen not to fold space this evening insofar as it's 108 degrees where he is in Northern California today, which probably means it's about 115 in the man cave. Right. Yeah. So jump on into the chat room. It's real easy if you've never done it before, and if you've got a computer with which Java will cooperate. And I realize that's an issue for folks, and I apologize. And if I could do something about it, I damn well would, but there isn't, so I shan't. But if you've got a computer that cooperates with Java, jump right in. Pick yourself out a screen name and pick yourself out a password, and you'll be right in there. We've had some new participants lately who have enjoyed the full real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat room during the hours during which this program is live. Yeah, so, come on right on in. And also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, we'll get this out of the way. I neglected to mention this right at the top of the program for the last couple of programs, and for some reason or another, I guess it makes a difference. This is a listener-supported radio program. We don't have any advertising. If we were advertising mattresses that you can drop a bowling ball on and pick it up with your Oric vacuum cleaner, I reckon we'd have an Oric vacuum cleaner and one of the mattresses here, and God knows, maybe even the bowling ball, because, you know, free samples and stuff. But we don't. No mattress, no vacuum cleaner, no bowling ball, no Bose Wave radio, no gold to buy or sell now, whether it's a good hedge against inflation or not. No herbal hair growth remedy pill ads. I mean, hell, maybe I'd try them to do a paid endorsement. You know, I see the ads for that and hear the ads for that kind of stuff, and I always think of I think of the scene from The Bunny of Seville where Bugs sprinkles Elmer's shiny pate with what appears to be oil and vinegar, and the next thing and then he massages it. And he's massaging his scalp with both hands and feet, or paws, as it were. And then, like, little wildflowers and stuff begin to sprout out. And I figure that's what those herbal baldness remedy things do. But whether or not it works, we ain't got it. No, the only thing that does and has for yea, verily, lo, these many years. And do you realize that our 10th anniversary as an internet-only broadcast is coming up? Isn't that mind-blowing? Yes. That's next month. But anyway, regardless of, no, the only way we stay on the air is with your kind contributions. We try to raise $200 every evening, and we've struggled a little bit this past week, but mercifully, we've actually caught up, and that is really exciting. Thanks very kindly to Chris from Germany, who took care of an entire day of fundraising retroactively. So she, having provided a have a show on me, well, she gets a Last Mountain poster signed by yours truly, including a reference to the couple of places in that fine documentary film where for the 3.4962841 6 seconds, I appear, and it will be notated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that will be going out in the mail, as will a couple of others, as quickly as I go and, well, as quickly as I'm able to find poster mailing tubes. Mm-hmm. I went in search of same earlier today and found out, and God knows I did not like doing this, but I even took my myself into sorry, Wally World, and they didn't have them, so it looks like there will be a sojourn to Beckley and maybe Staples or somewhere, or you know what, maybe I'll just drop by the old Horn mailbox. They may sell some of those in there. Yeah, but you too can have one of these. Limited time, not many of them, don't have a whole bunch of them, but for anyone who provides a have a show on me or a $200 contribution to the equipment fund, either way, you'll get an original, no kidding, Last Mountain movie poster. Yes. Earther pointing out, you've had a longer lifespan than your average red shirt ensign on Star Trek. I know. Believe me, as I went searching for poster tubes in Wally World, I was looking for Star Trek salt monsters and the gelatinous things that fall off ceilings. Oh no, wait, that's the Walmart deli. At every turn. But yes, for a limited time indeed, for a limited time only. Your have a show on me or $200 contribution to the equipment fund will get you one of these posters. I think they're pretty cool. And they'll look great framed on your living room wall, your office wall, in your garage, your man cave, woman cave, what have you. So if you want one of those, just let me know, and, well, I'll make it happen. Mm-hmm. How about that? The post office carries mailing tubes. I know, it might seem obvious to some, but not me. And I just don't know if my little local post office has as many of them as, well, we might be needing. But they can probably order them in, can't they? Yes. Mm-hmm. He can be taught. Well, thank you, Sparky. Staples has them, $1.99 each. And Staples is in Beckley, and that's why I said I figured I would be heading to Beckley, probably over the weekend. Yeah. And thanks go out to our dear old friend of long standing and longtime supporter of the program, Tosh. Thank you, Tosh. Tosh took a bite out of this evening's fundraising And because Tosh is apparently a Carol Baker fan, we have $98.89. I pre-ciphered that. Not deciphered, pre-ciphered. I pre-ciphered that so that I wouldn't have to carry the 19. Do it on the air. Right. But that's the fundraising goal for the remainder of the evening. $98.89, or for the remainder of the week, $298.89. And hopefully, also, thank you, Chris, to Chris for kicking into the equipment fund as well. Because just to remind folks, we're going to buy the gizmos that we talked about that will enable me to fill in guest host for Mike Malloy. And along the way, I've noticed because you guys have brought it to my attention that there are some little noises and aggravating problems that yet persist, one of which is the telephony. Some people can use the stress line gizmo. Other people can't. And that probably means I've got a knob sideways somewhere. But among other things, we're going to try to get the wildly expensive Comrex phone box gizmo fixed. Okie dokie? Yeah. Cool, huh? Right. All right, that takes care of all the housekeeping, I hope. God knows, with any luck, we may be able to make it through an entire program. And it's a challenge because this is, after all, Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. But we're going to try to get through an entire program without referencing that evangelical fundamentalist jihadist in Kentucky Stan. Because I'm sick of it. I tried to the best of my abilities last night to explain the only reason to continue to talk about her and I think my analysis is pretty well spot on. And I think we covered it pretty well. Now, warning, that is not to say that we will not discuss issues related in one way or another to what has been going on there. Because it relates directly to the people who are trying to undo the very idea of representative constitutional governance in the United States, insofar as they would prefer to have a theocracy based upon the entirely bizarre rules that are laid out in the Old Testament. Things like not growing two crops side by side, or wearing garments that are woven from different materials. You know, Dacron polyester blends, what have you, right? Because they really do. The right wing in this country, most of whom identify as God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Republicans, are the ones who want it. And there's enough. It's getting to where there's enough of them that if they get the White House, the Supreme Court, and the Congress, they might very well go to work on doing exactly that. There is some good news, as Dr. Who points out in the chat room. A polling released yesterday or this morning indicates that Senator Bernie Sanders has a slim lead now in Iowa-Wastan, which gives a little bit of hope for Iowa. and Iowans. That's probably Barbie out there knocking, going door to door with a cute as hell golden retriever saying, the puppy wants you to vote for Bernie. Can't you vote for Bernie for the puppy, please? And being good-hearted Midwesterners, they go, well, if it's what the puppy wants. Yeah. Okay, Carol reminds us she didn't start the odd change business. Luda did that. And Carol notes, Luda is my hero. You got that, Luda? You're Carol's hero. But it, of course, has become a bit of a thing. Odd change and all. Yeah. That's how we wind up with $98.89 to go this evening. Right. No, but being thorn in the side Thursday, there is stuff that we probably... I have to deal with, then it may tangentially touch on that awful multiply divorced, multiply married, fornicating adulteress, you know who. Right, because it's a little galling. It is galling, but not surprising. As Ron and Raleigh notes, maybe you could address this. What do you think of CNN comparing Kim Davis to Rosa Parks? That's what I think. And some other strange little furry forest animal noises. Yes, they really did. But from a thorn in the side Thursday standpoint, we're going to have to deal, this isn't just a matter of attention seeking. It's not just trying to get, hey, look at me. We closed the program last night with the ongoing babble of pastor, governor, brother, reverend, presidential candidate, diabetes, snake oil cure salesman, Mike Huckabee. And hell, I feel like I've walked 10 miles just having to say that. But exhausting as it is, that's who he is. We closed the program with that last night, and it looks like we're going to open the program with this jackass again tonight. And please understand, jackass is not name-calling of PGB. It's an adjective, although it may be, it's a metaphor, and it's kind of insulting to perfectly good, decent jackasses out there everywhere, but he is one. Mm-hmm. And let's put one thing to rest real quick. Like, Kim Davis isn't Rosa Parks. Kim Davis is the bus driver who screamed at Rosa Parks to get her black ass to the back of the bus. That's, yeah, if we're going to work with these kind of analogous situations. But Huckabee really is giving us a picture window into the theocratic hell that the right wing envisions for everyone in this nation. And he's doing it by giving us a pretty good idea of how they think about the Constitution of the United States. If, for instance, you are a regular listener to Dr. Bill O'Brien's Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility, and if you aren't, you damned well should be, because you'll know more about civics and the origins of this country listening to him than you probably have ever learned anywhere else. That's not a joke. I'm completely in earnest about that. You'll know that at the time of its ratification, at the time of its drafting, and the arguments for and against its ratification, the Constitution was anything but a done deal. And, you know, in point of fact, the people who were in favor of the Constitution played a little dirty along the way. One particular individual, I believe he was from Maryland, and I can't remember his name right now. Dr. Bill told, I remember Dr. Bill talking about him, though, dared to question some of the provisions of the Constitution. And the proponents of the Constitution responded by saying, well, yeah, but who would want to listen to him? He's a damn drunk. Playing dirty in politics is nothing new in the United States. We just tend to think it's new because it's new to us. I mean, we've only watched it happen all of our lives. We want to fantasize that there was some other period of time in American history when we politely and calmly discussed the issues salient to our ongoing republic and came to reasoned conclusions thereupon. But it ain't true. Oh, no. No. We've been playing nasty in politics for as long as there's been politics for us to play nasty in here in Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever! Right? And so it is that we find ourselves confronted by pastor, brother, governor, reverend, presidential candidate, diabetes cure, snake oil salesman, Mike Huckabee, opining on what the law of the land meaneth. I might suggest that you have the hockey puck handy. Huckabee, the idea of him being president of the United States, absolutely gives me the fantods. Went on a radio program with right-winger Michael Medved. And, of course, Huckabee immediately climbed up on the cross, regardless of the fact that we all need the wood, to complain that he had been getting, his word, not mine, drilled by folks on TV over his position relative to that awful woman who, under the biblical law that Huckabee would have rule this nation, would have been long since stoned to death and never would have even made it to the primary election newspaper clerk of that county. Again, and again, for the sake of folks like Kate out on the Front Range, we are not talking about that awful woman. We are talking about constitutional law in the United States of America, which really does kind of matter. Because if that goes out the window, then anything else we would like for the United States to be goeth with it. Do you want us to do good works throughout the world? Do you want us to do something besides take something besides the Republican position on the refugee crisis in Europe, besides doing what the Republicans do, and doing a lot of hand wringing and saying, well, that sure is an awful problem for somebody else to deal with. Do you hope that someday we can live up to the promise of our high ideals, you know, that promote the general welfare, provide for the common defense, etc., in the preamble to the Constitution of the United States? Well, we've got to have constitutional governance in order for any of that to happen. And we need to understand the mechanism by which a significant number of the people in this country would like to undo the idea of constitutional governance. By the way, Luda is listening. And Luda says, thanks, glad I can be someone's hero. I thought it would be fun to teach Bob math. That gets amended to teach Bob a little math. Very little indeed. Absolutely. So without further ado, herewith, we have constitutional, and I pronounce it that way because it's spelled K-O-N-S-T-I-T-O-O-S-H-U-N-U-L-L, constitutional. Probably needs a couple of extra K's in front of it there when we're talking about Mike Huckabee. The scholar, Mike Huckabee, on the principle, I suppose you would say this is an exegesis on the principle of stare decisis, S-T-A-R-E-D-E-C-I-S-I-S, stare decisis. And away we go.
If the process of our constitutional form of government is followed, then you have to respect that that's what it is. And so if there's same-sex marriage in a state that has voted on it either directly by the people's vote or by the elected representatives, I would disagree with it as being a valid definition of marriage. But there's sometimes that you accept the law even if you don't agree with it. But what you don't accept is bypassing the process. And Michael, this is where I think a lot of elites, because I've been just drilled by TV hosts over the past week.
I can imagine.
How dare you say that, it's not the law of the land, because...
Okay. I guess I've had a promotion. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, elite. I am a elite. Because that apparently is the word that Pastor, Brother, Governor, Reverend, presidential candidate, diabetes cure snake oil salesman Mike Huckabee wants to use to describe anyone who actually understands how the Constitution works, as opposed to the weird, twisted, little hallucinatory mishmash that it is bobbing around in those thin gray settlings that between his ears that pass for brain. Only elite, because, see, we are 38 seconds into the clip, and he's already wrong. How? Okay, well, let's find out.
Because that's their phrase. It's the law of the land. Michael, Dred Scott decision of the process of our constitutional form of government is followed, then you have to respect that that's what it is. And so if there's...
Okay. So far, he's not wrong. If the constitutional process is the form of our government is followed, then that's what it is. It's not a particularly elegant nor erudite expression of how it works, and people who have had at least a cup of coffee in law school and scholars of the Constitution and historians are probably gagging and retching a little bit at the ignorance that this man manifests. But yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I knew we would get right under Stephen New York's skin. We're all elites. Cool. Where do I pick up my privilege card? I know. Do I get to summer on Martha's Vineyard or something? Now that I'm an elite, have those little lady finger sandwiches with the millionaires and stuff. That's going to be awesome. But this is about the extent of the rightness of which Huckstorby is capable, because he's about to screw up.
Same-sex marriage in a state that has voted on it either directly by the people's vote or by the elected representatives, I would disagree with it as being a valid definition of marriage. But there's sometimes that you accept the law, even if you don't agree with it. But what you don't accept...
So, his argument is that the only way, and this is, shall we say, a little bit antediluvian. According to Huckstorby, the only way something can be legal in the new United States of Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, is if a state, one of the several states, or some of the several states, or all of the several states, make it so by passing a law in the state legislature. Apparently, for Huckstorby, the Congress, you remember the Congress, in Congress, July 4th, 1776, that Congress? Well, I mean, not that Congress, that was the Continental Congress. I'm talking about the Congress of the United States of America. You can just sort of take the reverb as read. But the Congress, too. That's going to stick if I say it again. The Congress, too, can pass laws. And it can pass laws for the whole country. And inside the Constitution, there is a means by which the Congress can propose changes. We call them amendments, Mr. Mike, Reverend Mike. Yeah. To that Constitution. And then the several states vote on them, and then it can become... an integral part, an actual constitutional thingamajig. That's a very, very complex legal concept, a thingamajig. Yeah. And again, I don't know what. Michael Medved's listener numbers are like. I don't know how many idiots listen to him every day or any given day. Bless their hearts, the folks over at Right Wing Watch do, and glad we are that, in fact, they do. Because what this represents is a wholesale misrepresentation of what the Constitution means and what concepts like judicial review mean? So he's saying that, well, you know, if a state passed a law saying, well, I might, and he says, I might disagree with it, but I'd have to respect it as the law. Interesting. Particularly to a whole lot of women people out there who for years have been set upon and put upon by these right-wing religious freaks included in their number is Huxterby, who say that they do not have the right to make decisions about nor manage the workings of their very own reproductive systems. That is a constitutional right. Mm-hmm. And Huxterby is sort of arguing with himself. For instance, August the 20th, 2015, quote, people are frustrated that a president doesn't follow the law. No one should be above the law. September 5th, 2015, you obey a law only if it's right. Those two would seem to be at odds with each other. Well, no, they're really not, because there's a separate meaning if the president is, well, has, you know, skin darker than a brown paper bag. You know, that one in our White House. So let's get back to the clip. He's 23 seconds in, and he's already dead wrong.
That is bypassing the process. And Michael, this is where I think a lot of elites, because I've been just drilled by TV hosts over the past week.
I can imagine.
How dare you say that, you know, it's not the law of the land, because that's their phrase. It's the law of the land.
Actually, Mike, it's not their phrase. It is the phrase. It's the law of the land, because the Supreme Court has that power. Mm-hmm. But here's where you may want the hockey puck, because he's about to go into some pretty offensive territory, nasty territory. I'd tear off a couple of strips of duct tape, too, if I were you. You know, the special horn duct tape with the logo and everything.
Michael, Dred Scott decision of 1857 still...
I told you. The Dred Scott decision of 1857. The Supreme Court decision. And you know, if you're a longtime member of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, you may recall that at some point in time, I have remarked that the Supreme Court has gotten issues wrong as often as it has gotten them right. And in the Dred Scott decision, they got it egregiously wrong. But anyway.
Remains, Michael, Dred Scott decision of 1857 still remains to this day the law of the land, which says that black people aren't fully human.
No, it doesn't, Mike. You know why it doesn't? Because we amended the Constitution. We talked about the changey thingy for the Constitution that we call amendments the other day, a little bit ago. It is not the law of the land. Because the Congress can, in fact, act to overturn a Supreme Court decision. Out in the several states, the states can act to overturn Supreme Court decisions in their states. Now, granted, the Mississippi legislature can't act to overturn a Supreme Court decision in Minnesota, but there really are states' rats, and the states are little sovereign nations to a certain extent. It has made this a rather messy process for the last 200 plus years. But it is what it is. But the Dred Scott decision is not still the law of the land. It has been, in addition to the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, having overruled its impact, it has also been declared a nullity by subsequent courts. So it's not. Now, this is not to say that he's an idiot because he didn't go to law school. Pastor, brother, governor, reverend, presidential candidate, diabetes cure, snake oil salesman Mike Huckstaby would be an idiot if he had gone to law school. Compare favorably Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz. The man is said to have a monumental IQ. But all he has to do is open his Harvard Law School educated mouth, and you find out that he is a goddamn boob. See? It helps to have had a little formal teaching about the Constitution, or to have, at the very least, done some significant lay reading on it. In many ways, law school is kind of like it's like a Rosetta Stone for the class for reading a different language. Words that you and I take for granted don't mean the same thing in the law as they mean in everyday parlance. So that. And no particular example comes immediately to mind. But things that mean one thing to you and me, if they appear in a court decision, may not mean that at all. Okay, here's an example. Kind of. This is sort of an oblique example. In the Brown versus Board of Education case, the Supreme Court, you know, the Supreme Court that Mike Huckstaby despises, the Supreme Court said that desegregation of schools was to take place with all deliberate speed. And most anybody who reads that phrase thinks, well, you would think that the Supreme Court meant, you know, get it done yesterday. But then you get out your fun little dictionary, and you find out that deliberate means slow. So the Supreme Court actually ordered that desegregation be accomplished with all slow speed. Didn't take long for people to figure that out, but it's right there. It's either in Brown versus Board of Education or it's in its progeny. But Steve points out legal versus real world words. Here's a set of them. Negligent versus reckless versus willful. They almost sound similar, don't they? But they mean wildly different things. To simply be negligent is to do or not do that thing which the ordinary reasonable person under the same or similar circumstances would do or not do. Which in itself is word salad. And then there's reckless, which is to be really, really negligent. And then there's willful and wanton, which rises almost to the level of intentional conduct. Whereas in the real world, willful sounds kind of like a kid throwing a tantrum. Yeah. Thank you, Steve. But in law school, you learn to read you read what appears to be the same language, English, only it has vastly different meanings. And what I'm hoping to accomplish here is to show the degree to which pastor, brother, governor, reverend, presidential candidate, diabetes cure, snake oil salesman, Mike Huckabee, is an idiot. Because he is. He has just enough larnin' down there to the Arkansas Bible College and Veterinary Medicine School, what he'd done attended, to make him sound like he's intelligent. Because, see, that's important if you're going to be a gospel sharp, if you're going to be a holiness hustler. You have to be able to stand up there in the pulpit and make the rubes think you know what you're talking about, when in fact most preaching is merely speculating upon how many angels can fit on the head of a pin in order to do the Macarena. But the argument being put forward here is that somehow or another, the Dred Scott decision, which is the one, it really stands out as probably the most heinous decision the Supreme Court has ever made, followed in wickedness by Plessy versus Ferguson, followed in evilness by, there's a whole bunch of them, but the case that Lochner followed maybe by the Slaughterhouse cases, and rounded out by Bush v. Gore. But everybody pretty much agrees that Dred Scott was the nastiest decision ever rendered by the Supreme Court of the United States, because it said that by operation of natural law, and see, that's another thing. Chief Justice Roger Taney did not rely so much on precedent or stare decisis as he did upon his own racism and natural bigotry. And that's what happens when that kind of crap sneaks in to the Supreme Court. Okay. So back to pastor, brother, governor, etc., Huckabee.
Does anybody still follow the Dred Scott Supreme Court decision?
Well, the Dred Scott decision was overturned by the 13th Amendment. And if you go look at the Lincoln-Douglas debates in 1858, right after the Dred Scott decision was adjudicated, governor, and seriously, it's right there. Lincoln says we must respect this decision as the will of the court, but I think it was wrongly decided, and now we must overcome it. And in other words, to recognize that Obergefell is the law of the land right now doesn't mean that you accept it permanently. But I'm just curious, would you try to undo it with constitutional amendment as we did with the 13th Amendment and the Dred Scott decision?
Aha! Michael Medved apparently knows more about the law than Mike Huckabee will if Mike Huckabee lives to be the great age of Methuselah, who never existed. Because that is the remedy, if one would call it a remedy, although it's kind of a mirror image direct opposite. Dred Scott says, I agree, Marty, there's something creepy about Michael Medved sounding intelligent. But in this case, he's right in an opposite world kind of way. Dred Scott said black people are not fully human beings. And the 13th Amendment corrected that. And the Supreme Court has even gone so far as to opine upon it. On the other hand, the Obergefell decision says that gay people are fully vested citizens of the United States entitled to the complete equal protection of the law, which and the law includes the various and sundry state statutes that control marriage. It's one of those messy places. Every state has different marriage statutes, just like every state has different driving traffic laws. There's some states where it's probably a goddamn felony to turn right on red. But that's the prerogative of the several states. Every state has a different statute of wills, because wills are not a matter of human rights. A will is a statutorily created legal topic, instrument. With me? I don't ask that because I think you're not. I'm trying to keep some degree of cohesion in the midst of the idiocy that is Mike Huckstery. So Medved is right in a 180 degrees different kind of way. The remedy to a Supreme Court decision which you do not like is to pass a law. Here's a great example. Every so often, some aggrieved American citizen will go out and set fire to an American flag. And then all the authoritarian right-wingers will say, "Bruga, bruga, bruga, we need an anti-flag burning amendment to keep the flag of the new United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, from a getting burned up." And some of your moderate conservative Democrats will join in. "Well, I'm a Democrat, but I say bruga bruga too." Okay? And then there will proceed a number of proposed amendments to the Constitution of the United States introduced into the Congress that will forbid the burning of the American flag, which tend to then fail when people realize that if we criminalize that which has been recognized as obvious political speech, then we've taken a big bite out of those freedoms that the flag allegedly stands for. Precisely. And then the same people who were opposed to burning the American flag go and buy themselves a Confederate flag or one of those urine-colored snake flags, and everybody's happy, as Arthur just pointed out. Exactly. Then they wave the Confederate flag. Precisely. So you see how this process works. The Congress can give or take jurisdiction from the court. They really can. They could pass a law that says they could pass an amendment that says the court shall not have jurisdiction over issues relating to marriage. They could. They really could. It would be obnoxious, and most Congresses have had the common sense not to do anything like that. But it can happen. So yes, Michael Medved, that is the remedy. But we need to understand that while Huckstery continues to describe marriage equality as the Supreme Court making law, no, what it is, it's the Supreme Court striking down a law. Because the Defense of Marriage Acts in the several states are what was found to be obnoxious to the Constitution, repugnant to the Constitution, offensive to the Constitution, thus unconstitutional. Just as we now recognize that a law that says, that says that people of darker skin color shall ride on a different in a different train car or at the back of the bus. Those were struck down as being offensive to the 14th Amendment. Huh? See? It is exactly the same issue.
I don't think that's necessary, because in the case of...
So just to review, he doesn't think it's necessary to pass a constitutional amendment to overcome the Obergefell decision. He doesn't think it's necessary to follow the actual procedure by which one would go about correcting an erroneous Supreme Court decision. Now, see, we could have, all we had to do was have a Congress that could pass something like the 13th Amendment prior to 1860, and we would not have had all the bloodletting that went with the late unpleasantness. But the Congress, because about half of it was made up of, well, at least in the Senate, slave owners, couldn't quite get that done.
I don't think that's necessary, because in the case of this decision, it goes back to what Jefferson said, that if a decision is rendered that is not borne out by the will of the people, either through their elected representatives and gone through the process, if you just say it's the law of the land because the court decided, then Jefferson said, you now have surrendered to judicial tyranny.
That would be that noted Supreme Court Justice Thomas Jefferson. Oh, wait, Jefferson never sat on the court. Yeah, it was commentary. It ain't even the Federalist Papers. And it's not even really particularly applicable here. Now, I don't know this for a fact, but I'll bet you I'll put down a nickel by way of a wager that quote was provided to Pastor, Brother, Governor, Reverend, Presidential Candidate, Diabetes Cure, Snake Oil Salesman Huxterby, by none other than David Barton, because they're pals, they're buddies, him and David Barton. Mm-hmm. And it was David Barton, you may recall, we had the clip from him last night, in which he described that God would never allow a cure for HIV to be found because it's God's punishment of people for being all gay and stuff. Really? Now, you want another way to know that Mike Huxterby is a goddamn liar? Try this. We have 50 states in our union. And something on the order of, well, more than half. And let me see, 53 into 5, 1 times 3, 26. Oh, my God. More than two-thirds of the states in our country have passed laws that say that gay people can get married. Now, if Mike Huxterby was not a liar, he would go the hell home and shut them up. Wouldn't he? Because he's all about, you heard him early on, well, now, if the state said, I wouldn't agree with it, but it's the law. Well, it's the law in 36 states plus the District of Columbia. Hmm. Now, granted, that leaves out places like Texas Stan and Louisiana Stan and Mississippi Stan and Alabama and Georgia Stan and Florida Stan and South Carolina Stan and North Carolina Stan and Kentucky Stan and Tennessee Stan and Arkansas Stan and Oklahoma Stan. Wait a minute. What do those states all have in common? Just a minute. Oh, the Confederacy. How about that? The same states that couldn't bring themselves to acknowledge that people of high melanin skin content couldn't bring themselves to say that they should not be owned the same way cattle, chickens, pigs, horses, and livestock are owned. Can't somehow find it in themselves to say that two people who love each other differently than the heterosexual majority does should have the same rights that heterosexual should have. I'll be dipped. Drag me through gravy and call me biscuit. Honest to Pete, how you like that? Who would have ever thunk that the same bigots who kind of invented racism in the Klan would invent this latest round of hate, spite, and general nastiness? So it's a very thin facade, you understand. Absolutely. And it's a veneer for Huckstrebe's theocratic yearnings. Because, among other things, concepts of equality go right out the window in theocracy. And concepts of freedom do, too. I don't know how women are going to be forced to dress in a Huckstrebe theocracy, although we get a few clues. Recently, there was a bit of a pop culture kerfuffle. I do so love that word. Over a wedding in the extended Duggar family. The wild one, who is one of the cousins, and she got married recently, and of course she invited the Duggar, the Jim Bob and Michelle, and I don't know if serial incest committer hooker hirer Ashley Madison patron Josh was there or not, but the one Duggar, and I don't know anything about this program, so I don't know him by name, but there's this one Duggar cousin, and she's kind of wild because she doesn't live by the letter of the Quiverful movement, and she got married in a white wedding dress, and it was all strapless and sinful and dirty and filthy, and it showed her apparently rather large bosoms. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, drove the Duggars wild. Because the mere sight of a female ankle is enough to send your average Duggar male into paroxysms of lust and masturbation and sinfulness. That's why people like Jim Bob and Josh have to buy more Barbasol than your average man does because of all the palm shaving that goes on there. I mean, hairy, bright. Yes, exactly, exactly. Steve caught that. This for Steve. Precisely, a big facade is what they play on a calliope during your Halcon days. Bingo. Yeah, see, I can't remember, Arthur. Arthur asked, was the Duggar Jennifer, Jezebel, Jalinda, Jessica, Jerrica, Jenny, or Jail? I think it was July. Or never mind. but no, the Duggars was all offended because she had a wedding dress that showed her bosoms. Her mammaries. And so when they got home, instead of posting any pictures of the heathen demon female breastesses laden marriage that was godly and upstanding and Bible believing and traditional family values, except for the bosoms, they posted pictures of July's wedding last year, just to be spiteful. And people got all kinds of upset. Some people got upset because Jezebel had showed off her bazooms, and others got upset because the Duggars was downright rude about it, trying to draw attention back to precious incest victim Jemima. So I don't know, in the Huckstery theocracy, I don't know how women are going to have to dress. I don't know if it's going to be beekeeper suits or maybe clothing from the Kim Davis collection that hangeth yea verily down to the tops of her granny, the shoe tops of her granny boots and clothes all the way up above her Adam's apple, and requirements for have your beehive hair done up to Jesus. I don't know, but that's the kind of thing, and if everybody looks like that, I mean, we tried that up in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, and we all know how that worked out. Are you a witch? Well, no, but you're dressed like a witch. Well, they dressed me up like this, and this isn't my nose; it's a false one. She's got a wart. Then, and then, yea, verily. Did Sister Jehooliga appear in public with a sinful bobby pin a sticking out from under her bonnet, and her face was not entirely covered by her beekeeping hat? Yeah. Time to put up the gibbet. Anyway, back to the clip.
John Roberts said the same thing in the dissent, that now 320 million people in America are being governed, not by their duly elected representatives. According to the Constitution, they are being governed by five unelected lawyers.
And you know what? John Roberts should goddamn well not have said that, but he was busy having a hissy fit. Because he has to throw a little something-something out there for the rubes every now and then. But the man who gave us Citizens United should and declared that corporations are people too now, my friend, ought not be opining on anything such as this. Because it's really not that complicated a question. Either everybody who is an American citizen has all the rights available to them under the laws of the United States and the several states, or we ain't got much of a country. I mean, the same goddamn tired arguments have been offered up every blessed time that somebody wants some damn rights in this country. No, really, go. Go study the history of the women's suffrage movement. See what the preachers said. See what the men who back then 100 years ago were doing the job that Huckstery does now. See what they had to say.
It is an offense unto the natural order of the world as ordained by Almighty God that a woman should vote. They are emotional creatures who tend to lose their minds at least for a week every month. And it says right there that women are to be subservient to their husbands as the church is subservient and submissive to Christ Almighty. And therefore, there is nothing in the Bible, in the Word of Almighty God, that even intimates that a woman should be allowed to cast a vote. It is not part of her natural calling. It is not part of the traditional values which form the foundational basis of this here great country. Sixty years before that, the preachers are in the pulpit saying the same thing about slavery. There's a reason that God Almighty, through His Son Jesus Christ, ordains the sacred institution of slavery. It is the natural order of things as established in God's holy word down from the time of Noah. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. It's a line. This country is always better when the Constitution and the rights guaranteed thereunder are expanded. It always fails when rights are curtailed. I think you can make a blanket statement out of that. But every time rights are acknowledged, not so much expanded as acknowledged. Every time rights are acknowledged, there's always going to be a gang of idiots out there, cloaked in their privilege, who fear that the acknowledgement of the rights of one group will somehow dilute their own. It is as if human rights, it is this way. They view human rights the same way that they view property. From a mercantilist, zero-sum game. If someone has rights, that means there's less rights for me. If the women can vote, then the power of men is diluted. If black people can vote, the power of white people is diluted. If 18-year-olds can vote, the power of old people is diluted. And we're seeing nothing more and nothing less than precisely that with this.
I just want to remind people that the basic fundamental principle of how you make a law is that Congress makes a law, a president signs it, a court can review it, interpret it, but it cannot make it. The Supreme Court, in the same-sex marriage decision, made a law.
No! No! They didn't make a law, you liar! They struck laws down as being repugnant and offensive to the Constitution of the United States. And what is most frustrating about all of this is that he goes on all of these for-profit media television programs and makes that same godforsaken argument. And it's not even an argument, it's just a specious claim. And none of these multi-millionaire goddamn professional broadcasters apparently have enough brains or brass to call him out.
for the godforsaken liar that he is. The godforsaken liar and servant of Satan, if you believe in Satan, that he is. Because, I mean, you want to talk about bearing your false witness. When you say that the Supreme Court made a law, when in fact the exact opposite is true, they struck laws down, that's about as barren of false witness as witness you can falsely bear. And if his God was real, again, with the lightning bolt, pfft, greasy spot. But the one reason that this works is because it's fear-based. Because Imrie and Marveline are sitting there in their matching Barca loungers, and Imrie looks over at Marveline and says, I'm so glad, Marveline, that when we got hitched, that they wasn't no gay marriage. Marveline, would you run off with some lone man if we'd have had the gay marriage? And tenderly, Marveline looks over at Imrie and says,
why, no, Imrie. I was a-figuring you would have run off with one of your buddies.
See how close we come, Marveline? And here we are, we've been a-married 50 years. And we got the matching Barca loungers because we had a traditional, upstanding, Bible-believing, God-fearing, family-values marriage. And we got young'uns.
That's right, Imrie. We got two children because we had sex two times.
That's right, Marveline, in the name of Jesus! But it's a straight-up lie. A straight-up lie. That the Supreme Court made a law. It is merely that in the absence of bigoted laws that say that only heterosexuals can get married, then we must acknowledge that people of the same gender may get married. Not at all difficult. Unless you have a pre-existing agenda to try to control the hearts and minds of the fearful and the ignorant.
Made it up, and they made it up out of thin air. Therefore, until Congress decides to codify that and give it a statute, it's really not an operative law, and that's why what Kim Davis did was operate under not only the Kentucky Constitution, which was the law under which she was elected, but she's operating under the fact that there is no statute in her state nor at the federal level that authorizes her. No.
Okay. Which would be all well and good if, after Loving versus Virginia, did all the county clerks that didn't want to, did they all resign? Did the election registrars in all the counties of the United States after women got the vote, did they resign? Did they refuse to issue voter registration cards to women? This is not a difficult issue. This is not difficult at all. In fact, you can't come to any other conclusion than the one that the Supreme Court majority came to unless you have some bigoted reason for it. Arthur said, of course Marveline would run away, Bob. Maybe she'd finally get someone who knew or cared about the female anatomy. You know, sexy time kind. Well, maybe not. Yeah. So, hey, it's 20 minutes past the hour, and time for us to take a little break. It being Thursday and all, and Labor Day having finally gone past, we've got the Green News Report coming from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to that. We got lots more thorns in the side on this here bramble bush to go into. And also, if you wish, your calls. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN. Some people have success with that. Others don't. We can find out. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, from anywhere on the planet that you happen to be and the government hasn't put up some sort of anti-Skype firewall. You can email bobkincaid@gmail.com. You can reach me on Twitter @BobKincaid. And you can also message me, Bob Kincaid, on the Facebook. Okie doke. Cool. And thanks go out. Thanks go out before we head to the break to Glenn. Thank you very kindly, Glenn. Glenn has taken us down to only $88.89 to go in fundraising for this evening. Oh, okay. It was not Jezebel Duggar. Thank you, Tim. Tim from L.A. pointing it out. Amy Duggar. Oh, my, oh, my. Why that hussy? Mercy sakes! I'm surprised, Mama Michelle didn't have a straight up conniption. Well, actually, she kind of did. Jeremy points out that Amy Duggar said she told People magazine she couldn't wait to change her name from Duggar. And yes. Jeremy notes, she can dance with the sinners unlike any of the 20-plus Duggars who fear it brings on the devil and is too tempting for males not to go a-romping on some dancing girl. Yeah. So let's, as I noted, let's take a little break. And then we'll go to your calls, if you so wish, coming out of the break. Or maybe I'll just fill a Bobster some more. One never knows. This is Conversation Radio, listener supported. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yeah. walk up to the door as innocent as children back before the war. My sweet Aunt Ed was left standing at the altar. My sweet Aunt Ed was left standing at the altar. Lord have mercy for what we've done. Lord have mercy when two people get along. One of us done anything like that, you see. By the next sunset, I had eloped with Mary Lee. By the next sunset, I had eloped with Mary Lee. By the next sunset, I had eloped with Mary Lee.
Thursday, September 10, 2015.
America's government has been bought.
A new entry into the 2016 Democratic presidential race. And yes, we've got his position on climate change.
This law will limit how often we can drive our own cars.
Oil industry's deceptive ad campaign succeeds in California as the state breaks new ground in climate and energy legislation. Plus,
energy is my baby. Oil and gas and minerals, those things that God has dumped on this part of the earth for mankind's use.
Sarah Palin wants to be energy secretary and then quit.
She always quits. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I think a lot about Department of Energy, and if I were head of that, I'd get rid of it.
If you were the head of that, Sarah Palin, I'd want to get rid of it too. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, all year long, you have been reporting the climate change positions of every single major presidential candidate to enter the race, whether Republican or Democratic. Haven't had any third-party people yet, but we do have yet another candidate, this time on the Democratic side.
Yes, we thought we were done, but we now have a new entry into the 2016 race.
You thought you were done, but yeah. Press on.
Harvard Law professor Lawrence Lessig announced his candidacy for the Democratic nomination on Wednesday. Lessig says if you want action on huge challenges like climate change, you have to get money out of politics. So his one goal as president will be to fix campaign finance reform and then quit. Because, as he explained in his announcement, that's the one thing that has to change first.
Only if we do this do we have a chance to solve the problems that hold America back.
Lessig accepts the science of climate change and calls for swift action after he does campaign finance reform. Former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin wants to be Secretary of Energy if Donald Trump is elected president in 2016. She volunteered for the job in an interview with Jake Tapper on CNN.
Energy is my baby, oil and gas and minerals. And if I were head of that, I'd get rid of it. And I'd let the states start having more control over the lands that are within their boundaries and the people who are affected by the developments within their states. So, you know, if I were in charge of that, it would be a short-term job.
Okay, so
all of her jobs seem to be short-term.
Yes, they do.
So Lawrence Lessig wants to become president and then quit, and Sarah Palin wants to be energy secretary and then quit.
Yes.
Nice work if you can quit it.
Well, it turns out that Sarah Palin is not actually clear on what the energy secretary's job is. The Energy Department manages the nation's nuclear weapons, high-tech research and development. It's the Interior Department that is in charge of oil and gas development.
You mean oil and gas and all those things that are her baby are not even in the energy department that she wants to run?
Different department altogether.
I hope she gets the job so she can be fired.
Meanwhile, in California, the state legislature is tackling an ambitious agenda on climate change and pollution. First, they banned microbeads in personal care products that are for sale in the state. Microbeads are tiny plastic pellets used in products like toothpaste and face scrubs. They're not caught by municipal wastewater systems and are now polluting lakes and rivers and mistaken for food by marine animals. The California State Legislature also passed legislation requiring the state's two huge employee pension funds to divest from coal. California's two largest employee pension funds control a combined $400 billion in investments and are the largest pension funds yet to divest from coal.
That is a huge story.
California was also considering a major climate bill to cut the state's pollution and carbon emissions, setting a target for California to get half of its electricity from renewable sources and to cut the state's petroleum use in half within 15 years. But, of course, the oil industry is against the idea of consumers buying less oil and launched a deceptive million-dollar ad campaign.
Some say it's about state regulators limiting how far we can drive by rationing gas, increasing costs, or penalizing drivers for using too much gas. But really, it's about making it harder for regular people to drive to work and drive home each day.
None of that is actually true, as Tim O'Connor of the Environmental Defense Fund explained on the broadcast. The Western States Petroleum Association, or WSPA, behind the ads, is afraid the idea will spread.
If other states see California, the nation's leader in gasoline use, cutting its consumption and cutting its spending, I think they're going to want some of that for themselves. And that's where I think WSPA really wants to stop this snowball from growing and taking hold.
However, the oil industry in California won on Wednesday in getting that 50% cut in petroleum use withdrawn from the bill. But California Governor Jerry Brown has vowed to continue the effort via regulatory methods.
So the million-dollar lie campaign worked.
For now, Brown says they won the battle, but he thinks they'll lose the war.
We'll see if they lose it in time. For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
California soul.
Twenty-six and a half minutes before the hour, we are a little over the halfway point toward done with this Thorn in the Side Thursday broadcast on the 10th day of September, 2015. And, of course, the lines are open. I saw Jim in Nevada trying to call in a little bit ago. Sorry, Jim. The gizmo was not properly paired up with the phone. That happens sometimes, but it's properly paired now. If you want to get back into the conversation, and well, lo and behold, there's Jim in Nevada, Stan. Hey, Jim, what's happening? Hey, Jim. Oh, Jim.
Hello?
Yeah, you're there.
Well, I just tried to get my computer off, so I don't have to rebroad. Hold on. You still there?
All along.
Well, okay. No, I love the term gospel shark that I have to give you. It was off the old Fox Comedy Show, which was pretty good.
I stole it.
Three snaps and a swirl, or three swirls and a snap. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I stole that from Mark Twain.
Oh, okay.
If I recall correctly, it comes from a short story called Buck Fanshawe's Funeral.
I got to check out that Mark Twain. He seems to have a the depth of wealth, the wisdom, but, you know, far beyond most American writers, especially of his time.
He is the original American literary genius. It has been said that American literature was born with James Fenimore Cooper, and maybe it was, but, I mean, if you want a good laugh, go and read Mark Twain's the literary offenses of James Fenimore Cooper. You'll not be okay. I mean, you'll laugh till you can't breathe.
Oh, yeah. Well, going back to what you were talking about, Huckabee, and I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, you know, trying to put myself in that theocratic frame of mind, and I can't because I wasn't brought up that way. You know, I was pretty much brought up a free thinker, and so I can try, but because to me it's just silly to even think that way, but people do. A lot of people, as you were pointing out, a substantial number of people, not a plurality, maybe even a majority, which would be devastating for this country. They grow up and they think that way. And, you know, if I end up talking to them, I mean, you can't really convince them because they're just so, their mind is so closed. You know, it's just.
Well, I mean, what's the old saying? There's none so blind as those who will not see.
Right.
No, this is that.
Yeah.
So did you get, I got to ask, everybody will want to know, did you get my email last night? Do you have Carol's contact info?
Yeah. I talked with him. He's working next couple of days. We're going to hook up, hang out, see what, another horn boy.
Well, it'll just be a mini horn in.
Yeah, no. It'll be cool, you know, because that's one more person I know in Las Vegas. Now, I used to live here, but when you move away for a couple of years, you interact with people. And that's just the way the world works. It's just like when you work, I worked with a guy at Venetian for 10 years, and then, I lost my job there, and then I guess I pissed Sheldon Adelson off or something. But anyway, I lost my job there. And then he ended up retiring, and we kind of kept in contact. But then there wasn't that core thing of work for people, you know, for us to kind of communicate with. You know?
Right. That formed the basis of the bond in the first place.
Right. I mean, it seemed like a great friendship. He was about 10 years older than me. And, then I guess he was just getting older, and he took the year old retirement at 63. Yeah, and or whatever it is. I'm sure Huckabee and the whole clown car is going to try and raise that to, 68, 90. I mean, they want to raise it to 70 now?
Yeah. I mean, it's already 67 for my demographic. We've already been screwed.
Yeah. Well, the crazy, especially like if you work home, if you live to be 70, from what you tell me about working in a coal mine, you're lucky to be that old. You're not lucky to, I guess, work in a coal mine unless you really like it for some perverse reason. Because it doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun, but the
You'd be surprised. I mean, there are you don't hear it so much from the demolition crews who work mountaintop removal. But while underground coal mining is very, very dangerous and very dirty and very bad for your health, the people who do it, there's a lot of people who absolutely love it. I mean, there's a little cult that's built up around them. I mean, I remember when the Kentucky Coal Association said that an astronaut and a coal miner were exactly equal one to the other. And they weren't being Marxist in saying that all workers are equal, that all work is valuable. No, they were saying being a coal miner is just like being an astronaut.
Well, they wouldn't be Marxist at all because that would go against capitalism. I know that.
But, I mean, there really is in Appalachia and probably in most areas where coal is a big deal. The industry tries to build a hero cult out of mining. And to be fair, you know, I've talked about my grandfather and my great grandfather. My grandfather loved mining coal. It killed him. He black lung, heart disease. But he started out when he was a young man because he didn't come from a coal mining family. My great grandfather, his father, had been a section boss for the railroad. And a lot of that family went into the railroad, but my grandfather, I think there's a contrary streak that runs through us, and I may have caught a little dose of it, Jim. My grandfather went to work for the newfangled telephone company. And it was a good paying job. And he hated it. And went back into the mines as quick as he could.
Oh, really? Well.
I mean, it was a love-hate relationship. You hated being abused by the company. You hated not being paid in real money. But there was something, I guess there was something about it that made it somewhat attractive.
Wait, not being paid real money, you talking like the old...
yeah, he got paid in scrip.
16 tons, and what do you get, another day older?
Yeah, scrip. Yeah, he got paid in funny money. It was scrip that was usable only at the company store, but that was okay because if you shopped anywhere but the company store, they would fire your ass and blacklist you so that you couldn't go, you couldn't mine coal for any other companies either.
Yeah, because it was the line, I owe my soul to the company store.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because the prices there were wildly inflated.
I think the Koch brothers and their ilk would like a time like that coming back to America.
It is their fondest wish, Jim. That's the dream of the free market. Laissez-faire, where the government doesn't interfere in business's business.
Yeah, it's just weird. I know people... who should know better, but they just kind of think everybody, and to some extent you do determine your own destiny and stuff, but in some ways you don't, you know, I mean, life throws you some curves, if you wouldn't have had them, you know, who knows, I could be broadcasting tonight's football game because I was a former football star, but I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. So you're all settled in out in Vegas way, and I mean this is the old line about right if you get work. I mean,
I'm pretty much settled. I got the disability thing straightened out, and everything's all right. Looking good. I was just giving you a call because. You know, when you're talking, when you mentioned the gospel shark, I love that term.
Gospel sharp, SHARP.
Oh, sharp?
Gospel sharp.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe I'll use that one of my rants at my church.
feel free. Sure. Well, look. Okay, it makes perfect sense because. Buck Fanshaw's funeral is set in the Nevada territory in Virginia City, in the mining camps.
Oh yeah, well they had that out here. Yeah, still silver and gold, but silver particularly still, you know, this is the silver state as I remember.
Yes.
I guess silver mining was a little bit, was that just as deadly? I imagine so, huh?
Right.
Silver mining as opposed to coal mining. Is that just as deadly, or was it just as deadly?
Silver mining is what they call hard rock mining, I think. It's not quite the same process, but it's still going under the earth and doing really dangerous crap.
Really. And then the other thing I hear, it seems like it's, I think I heard it on the news report, seems like coal's just, everybody's backing away from coal. It's, you know, doesn't seem to be much of a market for it, so maybe...
No. I'm glad you brought that up. Let's be very clear about that, Jim. There's a lot of news and propaganda out there about how coal is going away. That is absolute and utter bunk. Okay? The Energy Information Administration of the United States government, which is pretty good with their forecasting on this, says that the countries of the planet Earth will continue to increase consumption of coal for the next 30 years.
Even though, from what I understand from you and Malloy and Hartman and all my liberal friends and left-wing friends, that is basically signing the death notice for the planet.
The continued combustion of coal on planet Earth is an act of species-side, or it's an act of species-level suicide. I mean, even understand. I want to be abundantly clear about this, Jim. After that 30 years of increasing coal consumption, then it begins to decrease. It doesn't just end 30 years from now. We are at present, I mean, the only alternative, all this business about, you know, we're going to reduce carbon levels to the year 2000 levels by 2050. That's crap.
The
only real answer is stop burning the garbage now. Actually, the real answer was stop burning the garbage 15 years ago, 30 years ago. That's the reality. Now we're in a position where we just kind of hope that somebody will come up with something scientifically that will save our ass. The Peabody Coal, for God's sakes, who are headquartered in the Midwest, either in St. Louis or Chicago, can't remember which. Peabody is mining coal in Mongolia now. It was only a few years ago that some bold explorer found an absolutely mind-boggling supply of coal in, I believe, Mozambique.
So that just eats up the war drum to get more coal, and never mind, we'll just postpone trying to save our lives, basically, us being...
Well, no, we've gotten ourselves in a bind. I mean, we're at a cusp as a species. See, and here's a good example. At roughly the same time, about 1,000 years ago, England and the Mayan cities had run out of wood to burn. The Mayan cities fell into decline and ultimately collapsed. The English discovered what they referred to at the time as sea coal. S-E-A-C-O-A-L. We know, it's what we know as coal. But it was generally found in places near the ocean, like in Wales or northern England. And for some reason or another, they appended the word sea to it, and they began to burn coal. And so their civilization was able to advance where the Mayans collapsed. And that leads you up at the you know, look, coal and water power and steam drive the Industrial Revolution. And then the Industrial Revolution crosses the Atlantic and begins in the United States, and again is driven by coal. The discovery of oil in Pennsylvania is a relatively recent phenomenon in historical terms.
Yeah, it's like 1850, 1860, somebody Drake or something.
But the first wells in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And that boom and bust economy follows from it. And then it gets discovered in Texas, and oh my God. And so we go from coal to oil. But we're still burning coal. You got to have it for steel mills and the reduction of metals from basic ores and that kind of thing. And we discover, we figure out how to burn it to generate alternating current electricity. And we burn it and burn it and burn it and burn it and burn it. And now, just as the burning of wood led to a tipping point for those two cultures that I just mentioned to you, we're on top of one of our own. Because we cannot, because we're junkies. I mean, look at this, Jim, from the standpoint of an addict. We're junkies, and we can't quit tomorrow. We cannot go cold turkey on coal. Because people will die, and a lot of people will die. People will freeze to death in the winter. They really, really will. Because they are not, because after a century of reliance on coal, we have no idea how not to. I mean, we have an idea. You could survive a winter just fine if you've got the right solar and wind technology. But that is something that is absolutely not even remotely available to the poor. So that means the poor are going to die. Are you there, Jim? Hang on. What? I'll be damned. I'm sorry, Jim. I lost you there. The gizmo is causing no small amount of trouble. It just completely bailed out on the pairing. Go figure. But what Jim brought up is no, it's true. And the other part of the problem with coal is that, you know, there's some white privilege involved in it in the climate change debate as well, because you've got the rising middle class in India and China and places like Brazil who say, wait a minute, it's our turn. What do you mean we can't burn coal? Oh, right. The white folks burn it as long as they want to and then say everybody else has to stop. We get it. But actually, India and China and Brazil have a far greater understanding of the dangers of climate change than we do here in the United States. But it's a horrible problem. And we are not addressing it, we are not addressing climate change and the relationship of coal to climate change with nearly the desperation and urgency that it deserves. Arthur says, my dream is solar panels on every roof in the U.S. and the world, of course. I agree. I mean, that's part and parcel of something that our buddy Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, used to talk about all the time. It's very real, this crisis. And right now we're at a point where we can only hope that, the hope in one hand, you know, the hope is that we'll find some way to sequester the carbon and the CO2, which is just stupid. That's like waiting for a miracle. Eh? When the technology we really need to be working on is a decentralized distributed grid where all those solar panels can keep everybody's electricity on. Jesus, you know, it wasn't even, we had a little rain today, a couple of thunderstorms, and poof, there went the coal-fired power grid. Meh. And all the uninterruptible power supplies here, thank you, Randy, went beep, 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 and then it came back on. We lose electrical power more here in the United States than most countries in the developed world. It's a fact. 4 minutes before the hour, we remain, thanks to Tosh and thanks to Glenn, we remain at $88.89 to go in fundraising for the evening. Hopefully we'll take care of that and be able to go into Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow just with our usual evening's fundraising goal. Let's run over and check the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you doing?
What's happening, John?
Oh, not too much. Your previous conversation takes us in a rather interesting direction. And it actually dovetails with a conversation I had about a week ago with a couple of, shall we politely call them, oilocrats. Part of the conversation got kicked off because do you remember a rather bad TV show that was on called Sequest?
Oh yeah.
It was interesting within its own rights, but it was not a very great show. But I got a kick out of one of the earliest episodes, like the second or third episode of the first season. It comes to mind because I broke down and spent $10 and bought the copy of the first season. It's amazing they can take 25-year-old shows and sell them for $10. But in that episode, they had a genetically modified group of people that had been bred for warfare but had been discontinued or whatever. And they were fighting to become recognized as people, because they were kind of in that gray area where since they had been created in petri dishes and stuff, they were considered not people. But when they fought their little terrorist action, they blew up these things, and the show talked about, and they showed little pictures of these things being blown up, of these giant oxygen creators that have been located in places like the Congo and Brazil and stuff like that. And the underlying backstory in the show was that because of pollution and overforestation and stuff like that, that mankind had to actually build these giant machines to put oxygen into the atmosphere to sustain the planetary atmosphere to keep people alive. And your conversation with Jim and stuff kind of sparked that thought in my head, because it was a very interesting thing, is that, you know, that would be something that would probably end up being the so-called scientific wonder that would save the planet, would be some kind of a, you know, big mechanical solar-powered air scrubbers and stuff to take CO2 out of the air and put oxygen in the air, because we screwed the planet up so damn bad that it can't do it naturally anymore. And that would be a capitalist wild wet dream, because then they'd have to charge for air, you know. That brought my mind into that. It's like, you know, if you were a capitalist, that'd be the perfect world where you would, that the very basic things like water and air and things like that, that you could just charge for it, and if the people couldn't pay, you just turned it off and watched them die. And, you know, that's like a capitalist wet dream there.
Well, look, granted, he backed off somewhat from his original statement, but remember the CEO of Nestle saying there is no right to access to water?
Yeah.
That.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, it amazes me that, like, Nestle and what's the other, and Elf, that the PepsiCo Corporation's got their Dasani and stuff like that, and Fiji Water and all that stuff. That is some of the most profitable stuff in the world. I mean, stop and think about it for a minute. they charge as much money for a liter of water as they do for a liter of soda pop. And the liter of water doesn't have the syrup in it. All it is basically, and they had an expose on this stuff some months back, where, you know, oh, this is fantastic water that we get. No, you get it from freaking tap water.
The other argument is that, and I've heard it made, that tap water is actually cleaner than the bottled water and more pure than the bottled water that you buy at the store. And, of course, bottled water comes with its own externalized cost, to wit, all the damn plastic bottles, as well as the assault on the commons that is the bottling of it. But you can contrast that, John, with, oh, I don't know, anybody in the nine county area that was affected by the Freedom disaster of a couple of years ago in West Virginia. There are still people who are buying their drinking water off the shelves because they simply do not trust the corporation that, for profit, claims to be providing clean drinking water to the people of that nine-county area. And I don't blame them.
Well, I don't blame them at all. But the curious, rather ironic thing about that is that they are in turn trusting another corporation as to where they're getting their water from and what did they do to it. And so, you know, I mean, part of the thrust of the argument and part of what I called for was that the whole thrust of my conversation with these two mid-level oil executives was, and the argument that I put out and the argument that they pushed back on was, as I said, that so much of the problems that we have in our economy and our society is because we make decisions based on money about how profitable or unprofitable something is. We could have
but we make those profitability, and by we I think we mean they, John, make those profitability decisions with a whole bunch of externalities that they don't have to calculate. And I don't know why, but I just lost John too. And it's those externalities that squirrel the calculation. You know, what is the externalized cost to people in a state that is bedeviled by drought, to wit, California, when Nestle says to hell with all of y'all and continues to bottle water out of the public water system at reduced usage rates as compared to ordinary household users? Let's see if we got John back.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay.
An Amber Alert just punched through my phone system. Some kid kidnapped it. My phone is old enough that it dropped one call to get another.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've got this new smartphone I've got, I think, is smarter than I am. But anyhow, apologize for that. But the basic thrust of what I was saying was that they, you know, a lot of things we could have done, like health care and all these other things, are screwed up because people take financial considerations into the mix. You know, you can't have universal health care because, well, you know, that costs too much money. But like you and I have talked about before, you know, money is nothing but a damn number on a spreadsheet. And yet these son of a bitches will run. It's like the Congress is arguing now. They want to go, you know, they're pretending like they're not, but they're trying to drive the country back into another bond crisis by not getting budgets set up for next week. And if they don't get them set up, then the country goes into default at the end of the month. And, you know, they're arguing about, oh, well, it's not what we're trying to do, but we have, you know, procedure and blah, because Planned Parenthood is so evil and blah, we can't have all this horseshit. And yet, these things would not be an issue if people would freaking, you know, stop thinking that money is some, you know, finite thing out there, that you only have so much of it. And, you know, like in reference to what we were talking about earlier, same damn thing.
Well, I mean, us hoi polloi, we're only allowed to have so much of it. But it's it's a different set of rules. I mean, I saw a story earlier today, since Jim called from Vegas there a minute ago, and you're out that way too.
Yeah, I technically live in Henderson, so maybe at some point in time I'll.
Yeah, so Agnes brought a story to my attention about the Caesar's Palace Bunch. They're being fined $9.5 million because they've had this history of allowing millionaires to gamble off of the books. Oops.
Huh.
In point of fact, the word we're looking for here is money laundering. I'll be darned. I thought we'd run the mob out of Vegas.
Yeah, right.
Oops.
Yeah, you keep wishing that. The only difference with the mob in Vegas back then and the mob in Vegas now is that the mob in Vegas now, they practice diversity. They don't all have Italian names and eat cannolis.
Well, I mean, now, yeah.
I mean, you know, to me that is so much of the problem of what's going on. And I know I sound like a broken record sometimes, but you know, we fight and act like it is the most precious thing in the world is money, and yet it's the one thing that we have. It's the one thing we have more than people, is money. But it's who controls how it's put together, what it's done with, who gets to make it, who gets to have it. You know, it's like back when the crash happened. You know, the what they call it, the Great Recession. You know, instead of giving that $800 billion to the working people and stuff, and they could go spend it and buy things and do things and what have you, what they do. Oh, we'll give that out as a tax cut for the millionaires and tax cuts.
Oh, I remember.
And more tax cuts.
You get $300. You get $300. You get $300. See, a dim leader was having his Oprah moment there.
Oh, well, I'm talking about the one I'm talking about is the Obama one. When they created that 790-some billion-dollar fly-by-night thing, you know, they called like, oh, a $790-some billion money, but in fact, it was only the actual money that got to the people was incredibly small. Most of it was wrote off as tax cuts and buybacks and giveaways for rich people. You know, on that whole idea, oh, let's trickle it down to it'll trickle down to the people, and the job creators will make more jobs. And I've said it so many times. If you're running a business, it is not the business's thing to make a job. It is not their, quote-unquote, their job to make jobs. Their job is to make profit, to make money.
Right. And if with the possible exception of getting some pushback from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, there aren't any morality clauses in corporate charters.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly correct, and I tip my hat to her completely. You know, it's not their job to take care of the economy. It's not their job to make profit. And if it can't make profit, then, you know, their shareholders would, you know, be having all kinds of little elections, you know, get rid of the guy, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, that's how it works. And, you know, these people, you know, the only way jobs are created is when the customers have money to spend. And if they don't have money to spend, then they ain't going
to make it. Oh, but see, the flaw in your reasoning is you've neglected to take into account which people. Because, see, the American capitalists, as soon as they figured out that they could be global capitalists, looked over and said, but hey, wait, look, everybody's going to want a washing machine and a car over there in China. Let's take all the work over there.
You made a funny joke.
I made a statement of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, John, it's good to hear from you, my friend. Are you still toddling around the country?
Oh yeah, I toddle around and take stuff to some store so they can sell crap to somebody else, and then I grab and go take some car parts up north to. It's the funniest thing in the world. I'm taking car parts down to Mexico so they can slap it on a car so they can turn around and bring the car back across the border.
Well, you know, one of the I think of you often because I look at the shelves in stores, and it's not the way it used to be when I was younger. Let's use as an example one of my character flaws. The Dove Chocolate Company, and I'm not sure what sort of human rights abuses or environmental horrors they're committing, but they make these wonderful chocolate-covered dried cherries and chocolate-covered dried blueberries and chocolate-covered dried cranberries.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is about the cherries. I mean, maybe it's just supply and demand, but even there in, and I hate to admit it, that I was even in Wally World today, but then I went and they only had one bag and I went, well, damn it. And took it. I mean, I paid for it, but, big empty hole in the shelf there. And there's never more than one or two bags of the damn things. They must be wildly popular. You can have all the blueberries and cranberries you want. Apparently, the hillbillies are into the cherries. That just in time distribution system, it ain't working.
No, it never.
I mean,
does.
There's all kinds of gaps on the shelves.
Sure. Well,
maybe I'm remembering with rose colored neurons, but it didn't used to be that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you take China devaluing the currency. Okay, that is having a ripple effect in this country that's just now beginning to be felt. And it's great if you have money because you go to the store and the Chinese made goods are going to be cheaper because the workers and most of the expenses that are paid in China are going to be paid in devalued currency. But anything that they buy from us is going to cost them more. And so we already have an enormous, enormous trade imbalance with them right now as it is.
Well, sure.
Now it's going to get worse. Now it's going to be worse. Because
we try to make up that trade imbalance on pork and coal.
Yep.
But now that the Chinese own Smithfield Meats, I don't even know if that counts in the balance of trade. It's just their pork.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I took some time off the roads, good God, some 10, 12 years back, and I did shuttles, basically shuttling containers from the rail yards to the ports in Seattle. And here I am, an ignorant son of a bitch I am. I'm thinking America, big industrial power. I'd be grabbing these bills of lading and be looking at this stuff, and wow, look at all this great stuff we're transmitting. Maybe it was just the lines I was working off of, but of the stuff that I was taking from the rails to the shipping port. What I was taking off the rail to the shipping port were cattle hides, hay cubes, lumber, and scrap metal.
Wow, raw materials, almost like we're a third world country. I mean, raw materials are what comes from a colonial country and goes to the developed... Oh, dear. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what I was bringing off the rails, going from the ships to the rails?
Finished goods.
Tennis shoes, patent leather shoes, clothes, prefab modular parts for lumber and furniture and things like that, and frozen meats and things like that. And I'm going, let's get this straight.
Don't forget the poisonous Chinese dog food. And the poisonous Chinese infant formula.
Oh yeah, they have such a grand time over there.
And don't forget about the Chinese apple juice.
Yeah. But the hedge fund trader who's buying shorts on apple juice and buying future certificates on scrap metals and metal and all that good stuff, oh, he's making a mint. You know? And I got to admit, I dislike old Master Trump with a passion. Because he's, as far as I'm concerned, he's not even a very good businessman from what I can see.
But no, he's a bankruptcy artist.
Well, if you understand a lot about business, it's not that unusual. I mean, you know, if you've got a good set of lawyers and a decent set of bankruptcy laws, you can, you know, the whole concept of bankruptcy was to give people second and third chances. So I won't damn him too much about that. But what I got a kick out of today was, it may have happened a few days ago, and I'm just now catching up with it because of the holidays. But Trump seems to have at least temporarily a position of wanting to impose a modest and small tax on the wealthy people. And the article I read about it today is that the wise people who supposedly know all this stuff and get on TV and talk about how wise they are saying that no matter how popular Trump gets, he will never get the nomination because in certain key ways, he's not a Republican. Because he's actually made a position of saying, a little bit of taxes on the wealthy might be a good idea to help balance the budgets. What? The elites are upset.
I don't know. It remains to be seen. I mean, Jeb is going to have to put on a hell of a run to, I mean, I get, well, let's see, he's going to lose New Hampshire, he's going to lose South Carolina, and he's going to lose Iowa. I guess he'll be saved by Super Tuesday is the plan. Yeah.
Well, yeah. See, I got a little bit not upset, but I got a little bit perturbed because I got schooled this morning about the Democratic system. And it turns out that Hillary Clinton is trying to jump ahead of the mistake she made last round. When she ran for president, she's already got, I think they said 30 or 40% of the superdelegates in the Democratic system have already signed on to hers, whereas Bernie only has.
Well, then we don't even have to vote now, do we?
Exactly. That was the point of the article and the conversation I had over this new Facebook-y, Skype-y thing I'm playing with here, trying to make work. And, the understanding of it is that, you know, Clinton and they're saying that Jeb Bush is most likely going to be the nominee on the Republican side because the party establishment is what these two things are actually fighting over. These two outsiders, you know, Trump and Bush, they're outsiders. They're not good. They would have to absolutely sweep their respected caucuses and primaries. I mean, they would have to show such an overwhelming amount of support from the population before the, I guess we call the party machinery, would have to bite the bullet and go on their side. Because, like, from what Avoy was explaining to me, Bernie Sanders he's actually gotten a little bit ahead in Iowa. The problem is that the Iowa caucuses, as you kind of already said, they're already getting divvied up, and he's not getting any in the caucuses and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works. But anywho, apologize for the momentary drop there. Something apparently is happening around here with storms and amber alerts and stuff. So I'm going to jump off, and thanks for the combo.
All right, you take care, John. Have a good.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Our buddy John calling from somewhere out west, out on the roads late at night, and all the rest of that stuff that goes with the line from the lyric from Little Feet. Let's see. There is no small amount of no small amount of material left to go into. Two in particular that have gotten my attention. A couple of quick notes. The marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stan does point out that the Benefit Corp now chartered in 31 states, is a different animal. It's designed for the triple bottom line business, and social entrepreneurs pushed for it with pro bono help from lawyers who got the charters drawn up. Will it make a difference? It's too soon to tell. I think it's an exciting concept, but it, as Diane notes, it is, well, the jury is still out. I said that Brazil is more aware of the dangers of climate change than the United States is. Jim takes issue with that. Not Jim in Nevada, but Jim here in West Virginia. What about the rainforest destruction? He asks, how many acres per day? Bullshit, he says. No. As a general principle, they are more interested in renewable energy sources. Yes, Amazon deforestation is taking place, and no, that is not good for the planet. But as is the case in most of the rest of the world, they are not engaged in the wholesale industry of denying climate change. The United States is. And that is to say, a big chunk of the United States is. Yeah. I mean, the Obama administration has made some tepid efforts to address climate change, but it's not the kind of bold stuff that we desperately need. Opening up the Chukchi Sea to Arctic oil exploration by Shell and then letting them drill even deeper is not exactly my idea, or many others for that matter, of being proactive on climate change, and neither is not once and for all putting a nail through the notion of the Keystone XL pipeline, and neither for that matter is not once and for all doing something about mountaintop removal. Yeah, see? Yeah. Hey, let's run over and talk to our buddy, the Angry Indian. What do you know, Angry?
Hey, my man, what's going on?
Oh, not a heck of a lot.
Yeah, well, I missed most of the show, so I'm not sure exactly where you're at now. I've been hearing Cole, and then I heard Kim Davis dropped every now and again when I was walking around. You know, my main thing I want to bring up, because no one else would really talk about this other than you, why is it that the Oath Keepers can make a threat? It's, you know, because this is the way everything is a threat now, right? They are saying that they want the world to know that Kim Davis is under their protection. So what is that supposed to mean?
That's an open question. I got the story right here. And I get, well, you want to know what it means to me historically, Angry?
Yeah, sure.
Way back when at the behest of Andrew Jackson, the Indian Removal Act was passed.
Uh-huh.
We might as well call it the Genocide Act. It was challenged, if I'm recalling this correctly. It was challenged in the Supreme Court of the United States. It was not passed unanimously in the Congress. One David Crockett from Tennessee, a member of the Congress, vociferously opposed it, and Andrew Jackson turned every bit of his baleful power on his own fellow Tennessean to destroy any further political chances he might have had. But it was taken to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled against Andrew Jackson. And if I recall correctly, Andrew Jackson's response was, Justice Marshall has made his ruling, now let him enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, as would be said at another time, in another place, of a ruling by the Pope, how many divisions does the Pope command? The implicit answer being none, meaning that without the power of brute force, something like that was moot. And so Jackson went ahead with his genocide. And the Supreme Court was powerless to do a damn thing about it, and the Congress damn sure wasn't going to impeach him. It was, in fact, an absolute failure of the United States government. So when I see that the Oath Keepers, who are, in fact, I think we have learned over the course of the last few years, and especially at places like Ferguson, when the Oath Keepers declare that they will, by God, keep Kim Davis from going back to jail.
Yeah.
Well, are they not thereby saying that they will engage in armed force against the U.S. Marshals?
Brother Bob, they've been talking about going against the government, against the Marshal Service, against local law enforcement, against the U.S. military, against the United States Coast Guard, against the United States National Guard. They go on YouTube and make threats against the stability of the United States every fucking day of the week. Neo-Nazis, Klansmen do this every fucking day. Nathan Enner, who was an ex-prison guard, who may have information about the death of Alfred Wright because his daughter contacted the mother of Alfred Wright and said that my father was a prison guard. And he has an idea of what the fuck happened to you, to your husband, right? Or the widow of that man. So, you know, he's online with a shotgun making threats, talking about going into the houses of black activists, telling people to show up with slingshots, which is illegal.
Yeah, we went into that.
Right? So, you know, he's doing this. There's another one, John Ritz, whatever the hell his name is. He's threatening Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam. He is not being investigated. Nathan N. is not being investigated. Now, at the same time, you have a young black idiot who made a threat against white people and then right after that said, I was just kidding. He's still in jail. You have a young Latina in Texas who said that she didn't understand why anybody gave a fuck about that Officer Goforth being shot to death. And even though she came up with something, maybe I shouldn't have said that, and she deleted a tweet, she's in jail. Now, supposedly they got her on unrelated charge. But the point is, there have been black people, because they're not really activists. They're angry. They're not activists. An activist is disciplined. These are people who are venting frustration and are saying, oh, well, the next time, you know, that happens, where this is what we need to do. And they're in jail, Bob. Now, in the meantime, we got white people out here making threats like a motherfucker. Didn't we have Clive and Bundy, his sons and his fucking hired hands, pull fucking guns on federal officers not too long ago?
Oath Keepers did some of that. Angry.
Yeah.
And that's
how many of them are in jail,
and let's,
Bob?
Let's take into account Oath Keeper founder Stuart Rhodes' statement in regard to Kentucky. He said, people should consider her under our protection. We'll make sure that our people are keeping a close eye on the situation, and we're going to have boots on the ground to keep watch regardless, because this judge needs to understand that he's not going to be able to just go grab this lady whenever he feels like it. Well, the only reason for the judge to grab, and what a repulsive idea of even doing that, that is, the only reason he would do that is if she returns to her contemptuous behavior relative to an order, a signed, sealed, filed order of the court lawfully entered. Now, he would not grab her, he would hail her into court via a summons. I doubt seriously that he would sign any sort of an arrest warrant. He would have a summons served upon her. Now, I mean, I'm trying to go through this very methodically, angry, so that people can understand what it is these fascist thugs. And see, these are thugs. What these fascist thugs are talking about and are contemplating and are threatening. In order to hail this woman into court, and we're speaking speculatively, of course, in order to hail her into court, she would be served with a summons, and the summons would likely be delivered by a member of the United States Marshals. if the Oath Keepers did something to prevent the U.S. Marshal from serving the summons upon her, I don't know the exact statute, but I'm making a fairly educated guess that that would involve, in some wise, actual, not kidding, not the made-up kind where they say, you know, where the cop says, jump on one leg to your left and you use two legs and they call it obstructing an officer. This really would be federal obstruction of an officer in the lawful and due course of his duties. So there's that. If a marshal or marshals went to apprehend her and they interfered, well, then you're moving up into some pretty serious felony territory. What these guys are hoping to do is to, and let's remember, David Bunning is a Republican. He's the son of crazy old Jim Bunning, who was a senator from Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, he's not going to rock the boat. I'm sure he's not sitting, I'm sure he doesn't have his Kenyan muslin prayer rug there in his house. But these neo-Confederates have been rallying outside his home in an effort to intimidate them, and I'll be goddamned angry if there hasn't been a charge number one filed against them when they are in fact issuing threats.
Exactly. Yeah. But hey, somebody wants it to happen. I know I'm being redundant, but somebody wants it to happen. Or it wouldn't be happening. Somebody wants it to happen. They want a fucking race war. They've been pushing for this for a long time, but it's really not a race war that they want. You and I understand this. This is about class. Because poor whites will only be used as the police force as they were in South Africa. Right? You know, the Boer, the Voortrekker, right, was the cop. He was the, you know, low-level administrator. He was the clerk, he or she, that you dealt with. They kept the niggas in line. And then you had a police force that was more than 90% indigenous black, broken up into tribal components amongst its squadrons. So who was on top and who was still on top of the food chain in South Africa? The British and the Americans, not the South Africans. Maybe you have a couple of families or what have you, but no. You know, these white people who support this nonsense are fools because they don't understand politics. They don't understand any goddamn thing. And what Obama said about them was fucking on point. They go for their Bibles and they go for their fucking guns because they don't have any goddamn thing else.
They ain't got no brains. And that's proved in what they said. They actually, these Oath Keepers put out a press release, angry. And in it, they said that Judge Bunning, who is a Republican, I reiterate, for Christ's sakes. He's not some wild-eyed leftist hippie. But they said Judge Bunning grossly overstepped his bounds and violated Mrs. Davis's due process rights, and in particular, her right to a jury trial. Well, there's no right to a goddamn jury trial that attaches to contempt.
They know that. Well, some of them know that.
But no, I don't think they do, because they said that they consulted with Matt Staver over it.
That's what they said, Bob. Don't believe these motherfuckers.
Well, but I want to hear Matt Staver deny it.
Well, he might have told them how to try to get over what language to use.
Because Matt Staver will be putting his law license in extreme jeopardy.
Oh, he doesn't have anything to worry about. John Yoo still has his fucking law license.
This is a little different animal. This is a little bit of a different animal.
Well, maybe.
But the irony of these Oath Keepers claiming that her due process rights were violated when the whole thing begins because this religious monstrosity is denying the due process and equal protection rights of an entire class of human beings who happen to be American citizens is astonishing.
Is it, though? Is it? You know, really, think about it. This woman represents everything that Mike Huckabee is all about. He supported John Duggar. He supported the Duggar family after everything that has come out and what we still are finding out about that motherfucking clutch of fucking vipers. He's still fucking supporting them. Then he wants to get more camera time. He and Ted Cruz are tripping over each other on who to fucking get to Kim Davis first so that they can get the religious vote in a fucking country where religion is constitutionally not allowed to be part of the fucking election process. And she comes out with her sanctimonious bullshit, you know, and she's a Democrat by the fucking way, making more than 80 goddamn grand a fucking year to deny people their fucking rights, who, when she was married to her first husband, was fucking the third husband and had two kids by him, then fucking married husband number two, was fucking around with husband number four, believe had a kid with that guy, then finally married the man that she was fucking with the first husband, husband number three, and continued to fuck around with the guy that she married for number four. But she's a religious fucking icon to Mike Huckabee. She's Jesus. This is beyond. This is not just simply, you know, nonsense. It's nonsense for the fucking goobers that we have to deal with on the street. But fucking, you know, Huckabee knows what the fuck he's doing. He's an idiot, but he knows what he's doing. Scott Walker, too. That's why they keep pulling, you know, I mean, look, they contradict themselves. They say that the civil rights movement was anti-white and bullshit, but yet they want to name her the new Rosa Parks. Right? The new
they're a walking wad of self-contradiction, Angry, no doubt about that. But the larger issue here is that you're right. These guys keep talking about wanting a race war. And they're desperate to get somebody to pull the trigger first.
Pull the trigger, yeah. Yeah.
Because
so right now Black Lives Matter does it. You know, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you know, right now it's Black Lives Matter. They were saying the same shit about King. They said the same thing about
the fucking right now. But right now, it's the hot spot is apparently this hateful virago in Kentucky. Okay, right now the hot spot is they say they're willing to take pot shots at federal marshals,
and nobody would do a fucking thing about it. No one in a position of authority will do a fucking thing about it. Look, we can sit here and go through the stats all
motherfucking night. And you know what? That's what astonishes me. You know, I don't go around looking for fights, but there are points in time when if you do not stand up for the rule of law, then that's how you find the rule of law degenerating, okay? I mean, and that's such a loaded phrase, Angry. I mean, my God, I remember during the great Clinton penis hunt when Asa Hutchinson and God knows Lindsey Graham were hollering about the rule of law. My goodness gracious, that Clinton penis is just, oh, I've got the vapors. It's violated the rule of law, Rhett. You know, God damn. So they're all about the rule, but you know what? I agree with Carol Baker. She just said something when I read it, I had to mute the mic and laugh. As touching oath keepers, I call them. She says, these assholes make me want to toss a string of lit black cat firecrackers into the middle of them just to watch them shoot each other. Because they would!
Well, yeah, maybe, but we really got to take into account, you know, and really, really fucking look at what's happening and how we got to this fucking point, you know, where I want to watch a fucking movie. I can't see anything that doesn't involve some form of violence, some kind of military. I was watching a fucking cooking show. They had them cooking for the troops. It was part of the contest. You know, you have all of this bullshit going on. Then you have the United States taxpayer paying for a European colonialist motherfucking outpost, otherwise known as the State of Israel or the Jewish State in the Levant, depending on how you want to look at it, where they're oppressing these fucking Palestinians, stomping on the rest of the fucking people, lying about Iran. I mean, Iran is fucked up, but they're lying about Iran and making the shit worse. And here it is, these jerks are still talking about Iran because they've hooked all this up into it too, saying that Black Lives Matter is pro-Palestinian, so they hate Jews, and that Black Lives Matter is pro-Iranian, so that means you can't trust them because they're like this subversive group in the United States. They're pulling all of this shit out of their rectums. In the meantime, what you're saying and what I'm saying as far as the Oath Keepers, Nathan Enner, all of these other goddamn threats, the Klan, White Patriot Party, what have you, all it is, the Klan has been fucking illegal since Republican President fucking Grant. Yet they got TV shows. You can find them on fucking internet radio. They're all over the goddamn place. All right. Trump is being endorsed by fucking David Duke. He's being endorsed by the fucking Yahoos over at Stormfront, who I also want to point out to everybody is threatening the fucking Pope now. If you go to the white supremacist sites, they're threatening the Pope. They're talking about it in Europe. They're not talking about it here. They're not talking about it here. Why is that, Brother Bob? The Pope? How the fuck do you threaten the goddamn Pope and nothing happens to you? And they don't take your website down. And they don't take your Twitter and your Facebook accounts down. How does that work? Unless somebody wants it to fucking happen. Somebody wants this to happen. And like you said, they're waiting for a fucking spark. Now, these goddamn oath keepers, what they call... I mean, look at what the fuck just happened in Ferguson. The federal officers were not there this time. Not like they were the first time. Because when they showed up the first time, they made the oath keepers leave. Remember?
Yep.
So there's no federal troops the next time. So what happens? They're drinking coffee and joking with the fucking cops, wearing Kevlar.
Well, in this teleconference on YouTube, apparently one of the participants was a sheriff from the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Yeah, Kentucky. Who's in on this?
Yeah. We've heard this language before. This is all straight out of the Klan handbook. Now we see the rise of an imperial judiciary that not only legislates from the bench, but is attempting to expand their contempt power to likewise swallow up our Bill of Rights and circumvent jury trial. Both methods are used to allow the powerful office holder to merely point his finger and have his opponent thrown behind bars without a grand jury indictment and without being found guilty by a jury of their peers. No innocent until proven guilty before a jury, just guilty because the leader says so. That is a dictatorship, whether done by a president or by a judge. I mean, there is so much goddamn stupid in that paragraph that an ordinary human being would choke on it.
An ordinary human being.
Here's the hilarious part. If the Supreme Court had ruled the way John Roberts wanted, angry, and Nino Scalia and Uncle and Slappy Thomas. If it had gone the right wing's way, and there were, say, groups of nonviolent, civilly disobedient protesters outside the Round County Clerk's office, these bastards would be there with their guns and hollering, "Get a rope!"
Look,
because it's all about it's always all about whose ox is getting gored.
Yeah, but look, when Ron Paul, you know, who is like somebody's, you know, weird uncle and shit, who, you know, lives in the shed out back. You know, when that motherfucker was trying to run, he said, "Hey, somebody doesn't have health insurance, you know, what's going to happen to me?" What did the people tell him? Die. They don't give a fuck. They don't give a fuck.
They cheered. They cheered.
They cheered. You know.
Maybe some people don't take this seriously. I do.
I do, shit.
Because these people are—they're not going to fire the first shot because they're chicken shits.
Oh no, they will, but they'll make it look like somebody else did it. They'll make it look like somebody else.
Okay. So a U.S. Marshal tries to serve a summons on Sister Clerk Kim, and then they're going to shoot a U.S. Marshal.
Look, the fact that they even said that they would be there. That marshal, I'm saying this, he should show up with as much motherfucking backup as he goddamn can, all right? And when those motherfuckers come up with their bullshit, they need to treat them the same fucking way they treat black people. Just for fucking saying, "I'm not the one that you're looking for." Or, "Sir, I didn't do any goddamn thing." Or, "Sir, let me go on my motherfucking way." "Sir, I didn't do anything. Why are you doing this to me, sir?" And then we get shot the fucking death.
I don't disagree in the least. But a pattern has now developed here. The pattern extends from Bundyville or whatever through Ferguson to Moorhead, Kentucky now.
Yeah, Kentucky and the Bible Belt. This is probably where they wanted it.
Well, Missouri's not exactly an atheist paradise, nor is Nevada.
No, but this is
now a thread that is extending across the entire United States,
and Obama's not fucking stopping it.
I mean, God bless John Kennedy. for nationalizing the National Guard and sending them into Little Rock and sending them to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, but let's discuss for a second why he finally sent the fucking troops. I don't know how much you know about this because I know you're from the South, but the Deacons for Defense, you remember hearing about them?
Yeah, oh yeah. No. I know. I know why he finally did, but the point is he finally did. He finally did.
Eventually, yeah. But how many people had to get lynched, burned out? How many women had to be raped?
But this president, apparently can't.
Oh, he can, but
he can't because I think I'm speculating here. I admit it, but I think somewhere in the halls of the power in the executive branch, somebody has said, "Listen, if we do that, we're gonna have a civil uprising on our hands." And I think you and I have talked about this, how many cops and how many National Guardsmen we can count on to actually do their jobs and be faithful to the Constitution.
But that's my point. The fact that he can't do his motherfucking job, the fact that he is hamstrung like that, because I've written about this, and you and I have been talking about this for a couple of fucking years on this show. The fact that he can't do that, the fact that you even had to say that and you're 100% motherfucking accurate, shows how fucked up this goddamn country always has been. That shows how fucked up the country fucking has been. And you're telling a black president not to defend black fucking people, not to defend fucking minorities. And he's been doing exactly that. He hasn't defended us against any goddamn buddy. And if he even fucking said that the boy could have looked like me, Trayvon Martin could have been my goddamn son. Oh, he's bringing his shit into it. But look at the fucking crap. They're calling Kim Davis Jesus. They also did that with the motherfucker from Enron. They compared him to Martin Luther King and Jesus at his fucking funeral. He was a goddamn crook.
Yep.
Bush wanted to make the energy czar. They know what the fuck they're doing. They might be clowns. They might be idiots about it. They might look fucking stupid while they goddamn doing it, but they know what the fuck they're doing. They didn't pick these civil rights leaders' names out of a hat. They knew what the fuck they were doing. They condemn it on one hand and then say, well, you know, there was actual civil rights shit, you know, so hey, let's try to, you know, try to get some of this bullshit and move over. Come on, you just had a goddamn Republican motherfucker who got caught on fucking audio, fucking around on his wife, talking to all that Republican bullshit, and was so scared that he was going to lose his goddamn position as a politician, he figured, well, I'll tell everybody that I'm gay, really, and that I could not possibly have been involved with this woman, so that way I can keep my motherfucking job and get the gay vote.
Meanwhile, let's transit to a somewhat different but equally compelling and horrifying story. This one comes out of the Chicago suburb named Darien. And it is the story of a man named Inderjit Singh Mukher. He's a Sikh. And he was minding his own business somewhere around the 8th or the 9th, yesterday or the day before. He was driving, and a guy, and, you know, you can just put white in front of man, repeatedly cut him off. This story comes from a newspaper called The Hindu. Cut him off. So Mr. Mukher eventually pulls over to the side of the road so the man can go around him. But that's not what happened. The guy pulls over, walks up, reaches into Mr. Mukher's car, and starts punching him in the face. And he punches him in the face so many times the blood flies. Mr. Mukher loses consciousness, but before he does, he hears the guy hollering, among other things, "You terrorist! Go back to your country, Bin Laden!"
Happened before.
It's happened before, and it's happened to Sikhs before.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bigots, because among other things, the bigots are so goddamn stupid that they can't even get their bigotries right.
Mm-mm.
Asked for comment when he recovered consciousness. He said, no American, because he's an American. Just like the folks in Wisconsin were Americans when that Oath Keeper went up there and started shooting up their temple. He said, no American should be afraid.
Michael Page.
Huh?
Wade Michael Page. He went and attacked the Sikh temple in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's the man. No American should be afraid to practice their faith in our country, Mr. Mukherjee said. I'm thankful for the swift response of authorities to apprehend the individual, but without this being fully investigated as a hate crime, we risk ignoring the horrific pattern of intolerance, abuse, and violence that Sikhs and other minority communities in this country continue to face. You know, that ain't the Black Lives Matter movement causing that. That's cranky, dirt stupid, pig-eyed mean white folks.
And they know that. That's why they act like fools and they yell. I mean, it's just like when you've had an argument or you're in an argument with someone. And I get pissed when people are like, oh, people don't really think like that and you're full of shit. Whatever, motherfucker. Whatever. All right? See, what you're denying is goddamn human nature. I catch you motherfucking wrong. You've been out here pontificating about how the faggots are trying to take over the world and shit. And then I find out that you're fucking gay because my gay friend fucked you in the goddamn back room in fucking New York some fucking where. So now that we goddamn know about you, now I'm being hateful because I'm pointing out the fact that you're a fucking hypocrite.
No, that's, yeah, that's, because right? That's not fair.
You know, that's not fair to point out that you're a fucking hypocrite sucking dick every goddamn weekend and your wife doesn't know a motherfucking thing. And then to find out that she did goddamn know, but because she's a fucking Republican Bible-thumping hypocrite, the two of you fucking like the Duggars just kept moving on. You know, I mean, Ashley Madison caused a priest here or a minister, whatever it is this week, to commit suicide. Right? I'm hearing about other fucking things in my town about some of my neighbors who got caught on Ashley Madison. All of these Republican motherfuckers who have so much to say about what's wrong with the world, but they can't seem to stay faithful, and your religion doesn't seem to give them any goddamn discipline, right? You know, we both know what the fuck is going on. The world is changing. The empire is fucking collapsing. And the white man in America who is so used to believing that the world belongs to him is now having to face fucking reality.
But the thing is, the paranoia has been here for generations and, in fact, centuries. I know you said you didn't hear the whole program. Don't worry about it. But the point is, you know, so we're having hissies over gay people being able to get married. That's being driven largely by the right white wing. But you know what? The black church is involved in it too.
Yep.
Okay. I think you can attribute that to the fact that you know they're on the other side of the denial of rights spectrum now.
They kind of always were. But see, there's money in hating gay people.
Well, sure there is.
Siding up with these white ministers.
Absolutely there are.
You want to be on Jimmy Swagger's good side when he's handing out money, you know?
Well, sure, but the white folks had a hissy at the idea that their power would be diluted by the acknowledgement of civil rights for the black community. But before that, the white males were having a hissy over the idea that their political power would be diluted by giving women the vote. And before that, there was, of course, the great big blood-sodden hissy over the white wealth class having a conniption over the idea that they wouldn't be able to have free freaking labor anymore. And backwards and backwards and backwards, you know, all the way back to the colonization of this continent, when the idea that there was a little clinging pockets of white colonists who were scared to death that one of these nights the Indians are going to rise up and slaughter us in our beds because we got it coming.
Well, yeah, and that was the whole fear. And then you have to ask yourselves, how many times have blacks done that? How many times? But then I can point to
the indigenous population did finally get to a breaking point a few times. I mean, witness Tecumseh. That didn't end war, or end well. See what I did? Witness the Creek War in what was then the western frontier of Mississippi and Alabama.
And that was nasty.
That was way nasty. And that was, and I mean, I mentioned David Crockett a little bit ago. That's where David Crockett figured Andrew Jackson out to a T for a genocidal, homicidal, goddamn maniac. And David Crockett came back from the Creek Wars and didn't want nothing more to do with it.
Well, now we will probably say he was suffering from PTSD, from what I've learned about him.
I've read a great biography of him a couple of years ago. And he was hard luck from start to finish.
Mm.
And then finally winds up in Texas, where he winds up, you know, fighting for slavery.
Yeah.
I mean, to the,
don't tell Texas that.
Oh, I know. And don't tell them that we now have historical evidence that he died on his knees begging for his life.
Oh, no. I've had that conversation with somebody. He wanted to fight. yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was going to loop them manacles over Santa Ana's neck. But, you know, just as the Spanish Civil War was rehearsal for World War II, you know, the Texas War and the Mexican War were rehearsal for the Civil War.
Well, I would say more that the Spanish-American War was rehearsal for the Philippine-American
War. No, I'm sorry. I thought I said the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, the Spanish Civil War? Well, hell yeah. Look at what the fuck. Hey, I'll tell you some shit about that. They would not let black men out of the United States. They would not give black men the papers to leave the United States to defend Abyssinia, otherwise known as Ethiopia, against Italy. Right? But they let black people go fight in the Spanish Civil War. Who was the fight defending in Africa? Who was the fight defending in Europe? Even though they weren't supporting the left. You're talking about white folks. Oh, you can go fight over there and defend that over there. Go to Africa and defend Africans?
But as we wrap up, Angry, I come back to this poor Sikh gentleman. It's the 10th day of September as we speak. Tomorrow is September the 11th. And if I was of even remotely Arabic-looking extraction or remotely Muslim-looking, whatever that means, extraction, I would stay indoors for the next couple of days. Well, and I would never travel alone.
They're telling black folks to stay indoors because the rhetoric that's running around with Black Lives Matter is going to do an attack on 9/11. That has been pumped around. But then you ask them for a source on this shit, and they're like, oh, you just don't believe me. You just have a differing opinion and you don't believe me because you don't want to see the truth. Well, then where's your fucking evidence? Where is your fucking evidence? And then they block you. Jesse Lee Peterson is one of the people that is out here pushing that shit. This is the same guy who fucking said, I thank the white man in America for slavery because you saved me. If you didn't save my ancestor, I'd still be in Africa.
I wouldn't be a Christian. No, that crap drives me crazy. Hey, Angry, we got to get out of here.
All right, brother. Hey, if you guys can support this show, please do what you can to keep Bob on the air. Peace.
Thank you, Angry. See ya. And what he says is true. We caught up, and now we will go into Friday on the Front Porch with a fundraising goal of $288.89. $288.89. Hopefully sometime maybe between now and the beginning of the program tomorrow, we'll take a bite out of that and maybe get down to our regular fundraising goal. Remember, there's a premium on the table. If you don't remember it, or you didn't hear it, it's at the front of the program. Y'all have a great evening. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, our all-volunteer staff, you with your kind contributions, and all of you who participate however you do listening to this little program as we have our conversation night after night. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.